Hey, this is Asia Dang.
And this is Laura Varney, and you're listening to Heavy Topics with Lightweights.
Hey, welcome back. We took last week off because, Laura, you did an Instagram stories about it today, right?
Yeah, I mean, we recorded an episode for you guys, but it was like...
We have to say it was a good episode. We were wasted.
It was a good episode. And like, it was though, right when all of this was going down and kind of, we mentioned, like I said, on Instagram, if you didn't see our Instagram stories, we mentioned it on Instagram or in the episode, but we were waiting to have a specific guest on before we really dove into it. Cause Asia and I are not Black. And like, we didn't really want to talk about something that wasn't our own experience. We wanted to lend the platform to someone else. Mm-hmm. So the episode ended up being a very drunk episode that had nothing to do with the Black Lives Matter movement or the protests that are going on or police brutality. So we thought it would be really inappropriate to post that this week.
I mean, maybe I'll re-edit it and figure it out. But that shit was funny, man.
Yeah, dude, that was a good one. Next time, give it a few weeks, maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we're excited today because we had Mike Ojo on, who is a friend of mine, and he has been photographing the protests here in LA. And as a Black man, has kind of a little more insight into what's going on. And so it was just I felt really great conversation that we had with him today.
It was really, really good. And it started off for me, I like didn't know how to articulate things that I was thinking because it's still for me, like we mentioned at the end of the podcast, like you don't want to say something wrong or you don't want to sound offensive. Mm-hmm. But as we continued to talk, it was just started to become easier.
Yeah. And I'm really appreciative of people right now just being kind of relaxed with us about that. And when I say us, I mean people who aren't Black. Because the truth is, like, there are a lot of us who really do care and like who really want to make this world a better and safer place for Black people, because it's ridiculous that it hasn't been that way, and it absolutely should be. And in doing that, sometimes we don't always say the right things or know what to say. So I'm just appreciative of people being patient and understanding and like just being open to the conversation, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
But we won't, I don't think, waste too much time. I just I think we should share a review because we've gotten some.
Share a review. And then also talk about how our ads that we wanted to talk about include.
Yeah, totally. So, and this is something else we mentioned on Instagram stories. So if you guys don't follow us on Instagram, go to @heavytopics and follow us. But we are, we want to support Black businesses. This podcast is all about inclusion. This podcast from the beginning is Heavy Topics because we are all about talking to different types of people with different backgrounds and different stories than we have, and talking about these heavy topics. And in doing that, we want to include people of all different kinds. And we're right now dedicated to being more diverse as we can be. And so we really want to support Black businesses, and we would like to provide free advertising for any Black-owned business that thinks that this is a good platform, like an appropriate platform. So in saying that, I think it's important to say, remember that I think our base is mostly female. Mm-hmm. So that's important to know. But if you're interested in that, you can reach out to us at Heavy Topics, DM us on Instagram, and we will get back to you and see if we can work something out.
Yep. And then eventually we would like to expand that offer to just any female owned business as well.
Yeah, totally. Cool. So let's see here. From Beck! 78. The title is So Good. Fantastic podcast that addresses relevant and interesting topics. Two hosts that are not afraid to ask questions and acknowledge when they need to learn more, as I think everyone should subscribe to the theory of being lifelong learners and subscribe to the podcast. Ooh, Beck, aww, that was a good one.
Love that one. Thank you.
I feel like that's so relevant right now.
Oh my God, I was just going to say that.
Right?
Like, yeah.
We are not afraid to learn. Like, I feel like we're both dedicated to learning, and I hope that our listeners are too. So it's really cool. Thank you for the review.
I think they are.
Yeah, I'd for like sure.
They are for sure. For sure. That was so nice.
Yeah. We won't talk too much. We want you guys to get into this episode as it is super relevant and super important. As always, please subscribe. It's super, super, super helpful, you guys. Rate and review. We will always read a review on each episode. We love hearing from you. And follow us at Heavy Topics on Instagram.
Please. Yes. And we hope you enjoy this episode. And if you have any suggestions as to other people we can talk to, please let us know as well.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Welcome, Mike. If you want to first just give us, we'll all kind of explain like how we know each other. Mike has been a friend of mine for a while, not a super close friend, but we've known each other through a gym where I used to train clients, and he used to train with one of my friends who's another trainer. And we've worked out together a couple times and just known each other through that. And so I'm so excited to have you on the podcast. And Asia and I obviously have a few questions throughout, but we really want to give you the space to kind of share your story, share your insight, because you are the one who is experiencing this right now. And so we really want to hear from you for the most part. So like I said, we will have questions, but we're going to let you do most of the talking. So if you want to go ahead and just like introduce yourself and explain who you are, and then we'll go from there.
Okay. First off, hello. Hey, everybody. My name is Michael Ojo. To explain who I am, let's just simplify it. I played professional basketball in Europe primarily. Most recently, I was in Japan. I went to Lehigh University in Pennsylvania, and then I grew up in Los Angeles, California, went to high school in Santa Monica. And yeah, that's pretty much me. There's more to me than basketball, obviously, which has been a hot topic in the media, like, because obviously athletes, there's more to you than the sport that you play. And I feel like that definitely applies to me. Like at face value, people wouldn't assume that I was a writer, because I am a writer, and then I'm also into photography as well. So there's a lot more to me than just the basketball, but I think that's a decent summary of who I am.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that you make that point. I think it's super important. And that is one of the reasons also that I was so intrigued to bring you on, specifically because of the photography I've seen from you lately, from the protests here in LA. So yeah, it's really cool what you've been doing. Okay. So you, grew up mostly here in LA. So can you tell us a little bit about maybe, first going into like what you experienced as a Black man here in LA, as a kid, or even up until now, what you experienced as far as racism goes?
Wait, real fast. I just want to know, like, I feel like we're kind of jumping into things right now, but I just want to know, like, how are you feeling right now?
We can absolutely jump into things. That's all good. Cause that is how I'm feeling. I'm feeling better now than I was last week, because it seems as if change is starting to happen, even though it's not on the large and grand scale that I personally want. We're slowly taking steps in the right direction, and that's all you can really ask for. Like, immediate, I guess, revolution can't happen. Things don't just change overnight, especially when you're talking about breaking down institutions of this government and almost trying to reverse like systematic oppression and racism. Like that's not going to be an instant fix because people still, well, not all people obviously, but a lot of people still have that animosity. And then we have a president in place who seemingly just thrives on trying to divide people. So, yeah, I'm feeling okay. More optimistic now than before.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've been to many marches and protests, but when I go to them now, I definitely feel a lot more energy. I definitely feel that air of change that I haven't felt ever at any of the other environmental marches, women's rights marches, all of that stuff ever in my life. So, you know, even from, you know, a Asian female side, I sense there's more happening now. And like the energy is just like galvanized for whatever reason. So what do you think that reason is? Because this isn't the first, you know, death at the hands of police for on a black man happening ever. So what is it about now
that you think
the catalyst for it?
I think as far as the now, you have several factors that are coming into play. First and foremost, like, we're on the tail end of the first wave of a pandemic. So you had people who have been shut in their homes for months on end with no promise of an end date. And people have just been scared. And then that virus has also disproportionately been affecting members of like the black community. Like the numbers are crazy. Like I can't run them off like off the top of my head, but there's a substantial difference between like the deaths of people of color and like white people. And so you have that. And then you obviously have a super divisive president who has been around and been acting crazy. And then you couple that with racially motivated violence and outrage. And yes, like this last unfortunate, like, execution, we could call it that, of George Floyd, like, I think it might finally be the tipping point, because right before that, like, you have a black guy in a park who's a bird watcher and he's trying to watch birds in New York. And there's a woman who who has her dog off the leash. She kindly asked her to like put the dog on the leash because there's signs posted around and all that. And she threatens him to call the police. Like, she threatens to call the police on him. And she specifically highlights the fact that he's an African-American man, knowing just how much weight that carries. So she was basically like wielding his ethnicity as a weapon, because she knew that the police would respond in a manner that wasn't necessarily justified.
Right.
And then before that, you have another man who literally was hunted down while running. Like, he's running, be it for exercise, whatever it might be. He hadn't clearly committed a crime. He hadn't done anything. He was just out running. And he literally gets hunted down like an animal by, I mean, I can definitely say that they're white racists. So right. You combine like all of that together, and then you have 9 minutes of footage of an officer literally with a knee in somebody's neck who isn't resisting, who, you know, who simply tried to cash a bad check. Like, the use of force was beyond reckless and unnecessary. And so, when you have undeniable proof of stuff like this existing, even though it has before, obviously it's been around for a while, but now it's so blatant, it's so obvious that it's undeniable. And I think that in its own right has woken people up.
And yeah, I mean, I feel like there's almost a silver lining to this COVID thing. And I hate saying that because I know there are so many people suffering from that. But people being trapped in their homes and like watching television and like having time to kind of stew over what's happened, I think has caused people to take more action than they would have in the past.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? So it's like, as terrible as it is, there maybe is a little bit of a silver lining there.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would agree, because also with like with the viral nature of these things, like seeing Ahmaud Arbery, like just seeing the video, it's so appalling to see.
It's awful.
Like it's triggering in so many different ways. And it's reminiscent of, I mean, things that occurred in life, like lifetimes before us. And the fact that we're still having these moments, and now like it's obviously went viral, it's on a grand scale and people can see, and you can't go outside and distract yourself from it. Like it's in your face. So that forces you, like you're saying, like to really sit and think, like, this isn't right. So yeah, and that's just, it's frustrating. It's frustrating to think about.
You know, you said something related to COVID, and I just want to kind of touch on this point because I think it's really interesting and something to think about. But just as far as the statistics, like numbers of Black people who are suffering from COVID, and then people going out to protest and being really, really close to other people. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that? What do you feel when you're at these protests? Are you hearing people and taking your pictures? Are you hearing people talk about that? Is that ever like something on people's minds or no?
So I think it's still at the forefront of people's minds, but I think the cause that everyone is marching for and everyone is out there for is honestly greater than ourselves.
Yeah.
And in a way we're kind of risking our livelihood to really, you know, voice our thoughts on this unfortunate act. And I mean, at every march I've been to, everyone's been wearing masks, like people are handing out hand sanitizer. Mm-hmm. Like it's such a communal kind of event. Like I honestly never imagined that I would be in a place where everyone of all races, colors, etc., was just so unified. Mm-hmm. And I mean, like it's great that I guess we have a common enemy to a certain extent in three instances. One being COVID, no one wants to get COVID. Two being the authority figures of, you know, the police and how they aren't necessarily held accountable for their actions. And then third, I'm sure this will probably upset some people, but not me. Like we have a leader again who just tries to divide. And I think he's a huge threat to this country.
We agree.
We agree.
Just so you know.
I mean, do you think that if we had a different president, this wouldn't have happened?
I absolutely believe that things would not have got as bad as they did. I'm sure people would still have rioted and protested and voiced their opinions. But throughout all of this, I don't think even to this day, we're now a week in, if not more, I don't think Trump has said anything about people coming together, people calming down, people unifying. Like he hasn't done anything to actually calm the nation. If anything, he's done stuff to kind of stoke the fires of people.
Right.
Like when you're, I mean, I forget what the quote was exactly, but he was talking about looters and shooters and like as a president, why would you say that?
But he never says anything presidential, if we're honest.
Like he literally never does. It's almost like he's trying. I feel like he's consciously trying to stoke the fires of people, whether it's his base or he's just trying to piss people off. But he never says anything presidential whatsoever.
But the unfortunate thing is that works for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So
that's very telling about his base, though.
Right. But he did that, you know, this is an election year. And he's kind of just, you know, digging his feet even more into that stance of dividing us. So it's kind of scary to think, like, what if, you know, the presidential elections come around and it's, I know Laura really likes Joe Biden, but you know, if it's Biden against Trump, like I don't know if Biden is a different enough figure from all the other nominees that we've had to inspire people to not vote for Trump. is my concern, especially during this time.
I wouldn't say I don't really like Biden. I would say that between Biden and Bernie Sanders, he was our better bet of getting Trump out of office.
And I think Bernie, even though honestly, I would have preferred Bernie. But I think Bernie is a bit too radical for some. Even though, like, ironically, during the COVID crisis, a lot of the things Bernie was trying to do ended up happening. So I feel like it wouldn't have been that bad. But again, I think as Democrats, and I say that loosely because I don't even want to say I'm affiliated to a party like that. I just want somebody who's actually going to act correctly and kind of uphold the things that they speak on.
Right.
But I think it's going to be tough with Biden because he's an easy target to a certain extent. And then, I just feel like Trump is going to bully him. And that's just what he does. That's what, in my opinion, won the election for him last year. And then, like you're saying, like, he's now digging in deeper and deeper with his base, like to basically push out peaceful protesters with tear gas and rubber bullets. So you can walk out and appear like a tough guy and stand in front of a church.
Oh my God.
Appeal to your base. Like, it's crazy. Like, he's made multiple church appearances and the man hasn't opened a Bible in God knows how long. So it's like, are you actually religious or are you?
He's not religious.
The Bible upside down for the photo ops.
Exactly. Like, and I mean, if you really think about it too, like, I saw something on Twitter, they mashed the videos up, but there's a
Hitler
side by side of him and Hitler.
I know. Did he purposely do this?
And to me, I want to say yes, because there's no way those people and his camp would have let that come out unless it was an intentional thing.
And the awkward way of holding the Bible, he like went to pick up the, or went to like hold up the Bible once and then like changed his grip. Yeah. And it was a very awkward thing that he did. And then when I saw that side by side, I was like, this is not a coincidence. Like, nobody holds a book like that. It was really, really strange. So eerie to see. But just talking about Trump, I don't know if you guys watched the live Zoom with Obama.
I caught part of it.
Our former president, that's basically our de facto president right now.
First of all, I'm watching it. I'm like, okay. He has to do this right now because we're all like, please, somebody like with some leadership skills, like make us feel okay.
Yeah.
But watching that, it was just like, I don't know how to explain it. Like, he gives, and I'm sure that this is probably true for you guys too, but he like gives me a sense of peace. Like, there is some order and like everything's going to be okay. And we're going to come together and we're going to do this. And then there's like hope when you hear him speak. And then there's like with Trump, it's like the exact opposite.
I mean, I think with one, first off, like, Obama's literate and he can actually speak. Like, Obama's for sure like an orator, like, whereas Trump, everything has to be 100% scripted. The second you let him go off the cuff, everybody's gonna be offended and everyone's gonna hate everything. And there's no comfort that could come from somebody who purely exists to divide, you know, like Obama knows how to speak to people because Obama cares about people. Like, obviously he wasn't a perfect president because there's no such thing as a perfect president, but you can say that everything he did, he genuinely did with the best of intentions.
Right.
Whereas with Trump, like, it's, I can't honestly sit here and say that. Like, I can't sit here and say that at all. Because if you even flashback, I guess, to last weekend as well, like, he made his whole statements again about looting leads to shooting. That's why a man was shot, blah, 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 whatever. And he then reeled it back the next morning, knowing he had a press conference. But instead of actually addressing that to the media, he decides just to tweet it. And then he says something completely off topic during his press conference, talks about the World Health Organization and blames China for everything, as he always does, and then literally scampers away. And it's like, that's not a leader. Like, leaders put themselves out in front of the people and you have to be held accountable for what you do. And he doesn't do that.
Do you think this is kind of like the point where people will vote this year.
I think so.
Election, especially with younger voters.
Definitely. I think, again, to credit the younger generation that's coming up, they're well aware of the power that they have in numbers. And I think obviously on a state and a local level, like, the voting is definitely going to happen, because you can directly affect the policies and the people who are electing, you know, what do I want to say? Who are electing basically the governing officials, be mm-hmm. it the police chiefs, the district attorneys. Like, we technically have a say in all of this as voters in a democracy. But if we don't actually take the chance to go out and vote and let our voices be heard, we're going to keep ending up with the same people doing the same stuff again and again and again. So I think now, again, this younger generation has realized that, and policies and the people in power will change because we want our voices to be heard.
Yeah, I agree. I'm really excited, especially, I think people put so much focus on the presidential election, but really everything that affects our daily life happens at the local level.
For sure.
Totally.
And I've definitely seen a lot of posts and stuff just kind of emphasizing that fact. And I don't feel like people really knew about that. So I'm actually pretty excited to see what happens, not necessarily in November, but just in the next couple of years. Cause like you said, we have the full ability to shape politics and policy. And I think people are now really starting to recognize that.
You know, it's interesting because I didn't know necessarily anything about our police chief before this, you know what I mean? Or like the sheriff of LA County. Like, I didn't know, because I guess I didn't think it was important to know, which maybe that is white privilege, but now I've like, obviously you see things in the media because of what's happening now, but now it's like you realize, oh, I do need to take things more seriously on a local level. Like Asia said, it isn't just about the political election. I mean, the presidential election, it's about more than that, you know? So it's really interesting. But I also just wanted to kind of piggyback off what we were saying earlier about younger people making changes, because I think it is huge what's happening with the younger people and protests and things like that. But I also have seen just like more in my own personal community, like the older population, really listening and learning and taking, like, using this as an opportunity to learn more, which is kind of rare, because, you know, you see people once they get a little older, they're maybe more set in their ways.
For sure.
Me and Asia have talked about this before. I mean, I'm from the South, so like, I'm from Georgia. So mm-hmm. I have definitely seen that in not my immediate family, but definitely in my extended family for sure. And I was FaceTiming with my parents, and thankfully I grew up in a progressive household, but I was talking to both my parents the other day, and they were saying, like, you know, it's really interesting because I think before, like, I never considered myself racist or anything like that, but before, maybe if I would have heard someone say white privilege, I didn't really understand what that meant, you know, and I might have been offended by that. But this has been a really good opportunity to like sit down and have these conversations and like learn what that means and understand that, like, of course I have, like, of course I'm very privileged. Like, of course white privilege is a thing. And just hearing them like really understand what it meant and really taking the time to have like deep conversations about it. It was really cool to hear that, you know?
Yeah, no, that's, I mean, it's good. And that, to me, that is what's going to lead us to growth and hopefully take us past the petty issue of race.
Mm-hmm.
Like, obviously it's a huge thing, but race is something like, it's basically a social construct that we've made as a society. Like, there's really no difference between any of us that are talking other than the minute, whatever, 0.000, whatever percentage that changes the complexion of our skin. Like, and I don't want to say for whatever reason, but like, the way white people have kind of conquered and colonized the world and instilled that superiority complex within themselves. Not all people, obviously, but within themselves, like, they've just shifted the balance of things so much. And now it is refreshing to me that people are willing to actually take a second and address the fact that they are privileged in a way. And that doesn't take away from the struggles that, you know, you might have on a day-to-day basis, because everyone has struggle. But obviously there are some advantages to being white in the world. And yeah. I say that as well, knowing, like, I'm a black man, but even as a black man, there's still privileges that I'm kind of given because I'm a man in this world. And that doesn't take anything away from any struggle that I've been through, but some things are easier for me to deal with and do because I'm a man. Like, and as a black man, hell, like, I can get out of the car at 2 o'clock in the morning and not have to worry about any civilian necessarily running up on me or doing anything. Police, completely different story. But, you know, like, just examples like that are just little, like, small bits of privilege that I have as a man. And obviously, you know, I think just addressing the privilege that you have, it kind of disarms things and allows everyone to move forward on, like, an even level playing field.
So how do you explain kind of the Black Lives Matter movement to someone who says, but all lives matter?
So, oh, okay.
Such a good question.
So with this, like, it's, first off, technically, and of course, all lives matter. Everybody on this earth is important. Nobody deserves to die. Nothing like that. But Black Lives Matter is simply highlighting the fact that Black lives in this moment are important, because Black lives aren't necessarily valued as much as other lives. So saying Black Lives Matter doesn't, it's not putting down white lives, Asian lives, Latino lives. It's just like, in this moment, we're trying to draw attention to the fact that Black people are disproportionately being punished by law enforcement and just by society. So we're trying to highlight the fact that Black lives in this moment matter, and that's it. So, like, when people are saying all lives matter over Black Lives Matter, it's like, you just don't want to highlight the fact that Black lives can be more significant in one moment, like, that attention should be brought to the kind of injustice that's occurring to Black society.
It's also just a defensive way to go about that conversation.
Definitely.
And people get defensive when they either A, have fear about something, or B, like, feel insecure about it. So there's no reason to get defensive about someone saying that, like, Black lives matter. Instead, we should all be approaching it with love and say, yes, yes, they do. They absolutely do.
Absolutely. And that, I mean, that's, to me, that's the answer. It's just taking a second to think, like, yo, like, your life matters as well. And me highlighting your life mattering is not taking away anything from my life.
You mentioned how you grew up in LA, and it's kind of, I mean, viewed as a very liberal city. Did you experience racism while you were growing up in LA? What did that look like? How did that treat you? Lots of that stuff.
Yeah. So I went to Crossroads, which is in Santa Monica. Mm-hmm. And it is a very, very progressive school. Let's put it that way. At the time, it wasn't anywhere near as diverse as it is now. But generally, I would say I didn't experience much, like, overt racism at school. Moving about the city, like, as a kid, I experienced, like, bits here and there, but nothing that was too crazy. Like, the first time I was called the N-word was when I was in second grade. I ended up getting into a fight with some kids, and at the time I didn't even know the meaning, like, of the word and everything that was behind it. Like, I wasn't that well versed, but I just knew that they said something to me that, like, they called me out a name, basically, and I wasn't happy about that. But then that kind of thrust me into, I guess, starting to learn about the history of that word, and then the history of just, like, basically being Black in America. As far as, like, other acts of race, like, I've dealt with the police before. Like, I've been profiled many a time. Like, I've been pulled over just for the sake of being pulled over. And that's always a bit of a traumatic experience, because again, like moving through LA, like I'm not necessarily afraid of any other people per se, like not even not gangs, not anything like that. But I do have a bit of fear pertaining to the police. Like every time I get pulled over, like I pretty much have an anxiety attack, because you never know how it's gonna go, because it is completely out of your control. And I feel as if being a Black man, like I'm always presumed to be guilty before like I'm thought of as innocent.
That is such a fucked up statement.
Oh, like, you're
not afraid of gangs, but you're afraid of the police. That's so fucked up.
I can't imagine, like, I genuinely can't imagine what that feels like.
And that's not even just, you're not scared from like seeing video of other people. That's, you're scared from experience.
Personally, absolutely. Like I'm personally scared of them. Cause even with gang members and stuff like that, like I know I could have a conversation with a gang member, but I don't feel like I can have a conversation with a police officer when he's in that position of authority over me. Like when you've pulled me over, like there is no me kind of talking my way out of things, because I have to just listen to what you say.
Cause they're the authority.
And roll with it. So exactly. So I survive, cause that's really kind of what it ends up being. Like I've been pulled over in the last year, I've been pulled over twice. And one experience was so much better than the other. Like one, I made like an illegal U-turn, so I actually did something. So it's like, okay, you caught me. Like I deserve this ticket to a certain extent. And initially, like when the officer approached the car, like I was a bit worried, but then he started talking and he was calm and he was relaxed. And that immediately de-escalated the situation. Whereas the time before, I was actually heading to work out with Matt in the morning, and going up Lincoln, there are three lanes, and up until 9 o'clock, you're not allowed to drive in like the far right lane because it's designated just as a bus lane. And after 9, it becomes just a lane. And since there's no one, like if there's no one there parked, you can drive in it because it's just a lane. And so I was late and I got in that lane and I'm driving. It's after 9 o'clock. So I'm like, okay, I can't get a ticket now because it's not just exclusively for buses. So I proceeded to drive up it. I'm passing cars. I'm not speeding. I'm not doing anything. And out of nowhere, like a cop pulls up behind me, and he's not even like a motorcycle cop or even in like a police car. Like he's in like a police truck, which I guess Santa Monica police, we're in the police truck, are different than the normal police. But for whatever reason, he pulls me over and I start freaking out. Like my first instinct, like when I get pulled over, is I send out some texts. I'm like, hey, I just got pulled over. If you don't hear from me, like, you know, something went wrong.
So fucked up.
Like I call my mom. Like I let it be known that I'm about to have some type of interaction with a police officer. And that's partially to calm myself down, and then also just to let everyone know what's going on. And so in this instance, the officer walks up to the car, and like I lower my window, and prior to him even getting to the car, this is another thing, like I get my registration out, I get my license out, I have my insurance out, so I don't have to reach for anything. So there's no remote interpretation of me doing anything that could be considered hostile. And so he comes to my window and he has an attitude from the jump. I don't know what was going on with him that day, but I don't think I did it. So he's coming at me with this attitude and I'm like, how are you doing, Mr. Officer? And he's like, what do you think you're doing? And I'm like, sir, I'm just trying to get to this workout that I have. And he's like, you're not supposed to be in this lane. And I'm like, sorry, Mr. Officer. Like I thought I would be allowed to be in this lane because it said that it's after 9 o'clock. After 9 o'clock, you can drive in this lane. And he's like, no, you can't do that. And I wanted to ask him why I can't do that, because I knew he was kind of making something up, to be honest with you. But instead of showing any type of resistance, I was just like, okay, Mr. Officer, I'm sorry. I didn't know that it was illegal. And he snatches like my license, registration, and goes and walks back to his car. And I'm just sitting there like, this guy's really about to try and give me a ticket. for a crime I didn't even commit. Like, I didn't do anything. And he eventually comes back to the car. He still has an attitude. He's like, you're lucky, like, I'm in a decent mood today. Like, I'm not going to give you a ticket. But next time, be careful. Like, your time isn't more important than everybody else's. And I'm like, okay, Mr. Officer, thank you. You have a nice day. Like, that's not supposed to happen. Like, let me be speeding. Let me be breaking a law for you to pull me over.
Right.
Pulling me over just because you see, like, a young black guy in a decent car who's driving.
Let's talk about the police. There's been many, I've seen lots of people say, let's just get rid of the police. What are your thoughts on that? And then how would society run?
So with that, so the movement now that's actually happened is defund the police and removing like authority and law and order, like in police is not a realistic thing. It's not tangible. Like, police are needed. Their presence is needed. But having them have a $1 billion budget is not necessarily needed, because like, you're pulling money away from social services, from educational systems to fund and militarize the police department. And that's not necessary. I think by defund the police, it's like, if you break up the LAPD into essentially smaller groups where you have people who are actually policing communities that they're in, and they can actually build a relationship with the people in these communities, I think better things will come from that than just having one large gang, let's call it what it is, basically one large gang of people kind of roaming the streets trying to enforce the law. Because at the end of the day, like, I think it's the LAPD and like the NYPD specifically, like, they're so large that how can you really hold people accountable for what they do?
That's and a good the wrong
that they do. So if you break it up, I think it will allow the bad officers to actually be held accountable for their actions. Like, it's almost like if they were a business, they'd be a monopoly. And yeah, you can't really punish anybody if you technically run everything. So
do you think, though, even if it is broken up into smaller, I don't know if sections is the right word, but do you think that other police would still hold bad police accountable? Or do you think that they would still be punished for doing things like that?
I think, I mean, me being an optimist, I'm going to say I hope. I hope that, like, other police will start holding police accountable. I think now a lot of people still try and do it, but they're supervising officers, commanding officers, or whatever, kind of brush things under the rug. It's just hard. It's really hard to say, to be honest with you. Like, I don't know what will really make that happen, other than, I guess, more protests, more outrage.
Yeah, I do wonder how does one go about defunding police? That seems like such a huge ask.
I think, again, it comes down to voting, because we get to elect officials who might share the same views and policies as we do. Like, again, I'm not sure about the specific numbers on the LA County budget, but so much of that budget is directed towards like the police. And I mean, as recently as yesterday, like, I think it was $150 million of the budget was moved to now be reinvested in communities of color. But like, that's not enough. Like, initially it was $1.8 billion that the mayor proposed to go towards the police department. Like,
that's a lot of money.
Do you know where that money goes?
Have you seen their like their uniforms and all their whole getup right now versus the pictures of nurses with lack of PPE? It's like, it's kind of crazy.
It's ridiculous.
So that mostly goes towards weaponry, or does that include like their income as well?
I feel like it's a combination of the two. Yeah. I mean, I'm not that well versed in it to be able to really speak on it confidently. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a combination of their weapons, their equipment, and then ultimately their salaries, which we,
their cars. That
we pay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to say, like I said earlier, I've been to many protests before, but I have never been scared ever at a protest until last week, Saturday, when
which
the police
one did you go
came,
to?
Went to the first one on 3rd Street.
Ah, okay.
March of Beverly. Yeah. And I saw, we were walking in the back because I had my dogs, and then people were turning around because the police were blocking everyone on La Cienega. Mm-hmm. So what was once the back was now the front, and we were still walking slower because of the dogs. And out of nowhere, 10 police cars come just like rolling through the street that we were on. And I had never been more scared in my life until I saw them pop out in fucking riot gear. And there was no riots going on. And
they
it
looked
was just
terrifying.
Like, it was so fucking scary.
No.
And I wasn't even, I was a block away from it, from just them walking towards the crowd.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're, the way that they handled the initial set of protests, I think they mishandled it.
Oh, absolutely, 100%.
To say the least, because as I'm sure you saw, like you could see within the group, you could tell who was there for the right reasons and who wasn't. And instead of actually going after the people who weren't there for the right reasons, they just went after the protest as a whole.
Yeah.
And that march specifically, it started out so peaceful. Like, yes, people were frustrated, but nobody was being destructive that was actually marching. Like what I personally witnessed, like you could see, like there were some people within the crowd who were trying to instigate things, but it was all like, at least early in the day, nobody paid it any mind. Like you'd have people running up the sides who were like tagging stuff, and like most of the people tagging weren't black people. They weren't, you know, they weren't the protesters. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, the media actually like loves to portray that, or loved past tense to portray that the protesters were actually out there being violent, when in reality, like they were being peaceful. But you had so many other factions and groups of people using that protest as an opportunity to just destroy things. And I think the police they just didn't choose to differentiate the two. But as soon as they showed up, like they just come with nothing but aggression. Like there's just so much anger and tension that comes with their presence. So I completely understand that. Like it's terrifying.
It's so interesting with the media, because like the New York Times, for example, posted on Instagram this carousel of pictures. And it was like, I think it was like 4 days after a lot of the like major looting and like more violent like police cars on fire and things like that were happening in LA. It was like 4 days after that. And at this point, everything was, for the most part, very peaceful. And they posted on that day on Instagram all the pictures that are like people jumping on cop cars and looting and showing all the negativity, you know what I mean, instead of showing the peaceful protests that are happening.
And I mean, I think that's purely based on the fact that they know, like, they know violence is what sells to a certain extent. So they're going to do everything that they can to get eyes on their product. And unfortunately, they were using violence to do so. And I feel like the protests in Los Angeles, like even though, yes, we did riot, I feel like things were way worse in DC. Things were way worse in Minnesota. So like,
even in New York.
Yeah. And, oh, New York. It's been bad because, yeah. I mean, again, like the New York Police Department, they're notorious for just not caring about people's lives whatsoever. So, yeah, I think it was in Buffalo, New York, to speak more to your point about the police being terrifying. They went and there was a 75-year-old man who actually
picked awful.
One of the police, like the police officer's helmets, and was walking it back to them.
Terrible.
And they shoved him to the ground, a 75-year-old man. And he obviously hit his head on the concrete, and he started bleeding.
He was in serious
condition. Over him.
like, and they just walk by.
Crazy. But I think that's also the cool thing about, more so to speak to LA, is that since these marches and protests have gone on, like you said, we're on what, day 8, I think?
Yeah.
At this point now, you're kind of weeding out the people that just want to cause chaos.
Absolutely.
Which is,
they're tired. They're tired. Invested. They're like, all right, we're done.
They got all the shoes they wanted.
Yeah, of them being tired, and then there's nothing else to loot, because now you have like the National Guard and the police they're organized, and they're protecting people's, you know, businesses, and they're protecting structures as well.
Yeah.
Having been out I've been out every day since like last Friday. And seeing like what went down on like, well, not even what went down, but the difference between like Saturday, Sunday in Santa Monica and then downtown yesterday, it's literally night and day. Like,
yeah, downtown was lovely yesterday. We were just like hanging out on the grass, you know.
It was more of like a party celebration type, yeah. Joyous expression of, you know, our right to free speech and right to protest. Like, whereas what was it, Sunday, Saturday in Santa Monica, like I'm literally standing in front of the Van store and I'm watching it be looted. Like, you could feel the tension in the air. Like, people were so much more angry than they were before.
Yeah, I live downtown and a little outside of downtown, and it's kind of where all the police and ambulance and the National Guard are posted up. So even just to wait for things to happen. So it's a really weird environment just to see the National Guard in their army fatigues and everything just hanging out.
Yeah. Eerie.
Yeah. It's very weird.
It's definitely, it's something else. But, and then also too, having spoken to many a National Guard member at this point, like, they don't even want to be here per se. Like, they know why they're here, but they don't all remotely agree with the cause. Like, they're for the people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've wondered that.
They believe that the officer who did that, like, it's just wrong. Like, any decent human being can look at that video and see, like, yo, this is wrong.
And yeah, this isn't like picking sides. It's like, it's just being a human being. Like, what are you doing? You can't do that to anybody.
Well, I think I just read that everyone in that task force has since resigned in solidarity of that police officer who pushed down the elderly man.
Oh, wow.
Which is terrible.
And I mean, they should just be fired. They shouldn't be allowed to resign. They should be fired.
Wow. Well, but to do it in honor of their fellow police officer who pushed that man, instead of being disgusted that happened in the first place and in solidarity of the man who was pushed.
Disgusted, apologetic, like anything.
Yeah, yeah.
That just shows you how deep and intense the code between police, like from police to police, is. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. the same way as, you know, those other three policemen when George Floyd had a knee on his neck, and these guys aren't trying to get him to stop. It's like, there's a code there. And it's like a very dark, dirty code to be able to do that to someone and not stop the other person.
I mean, I don't understand how you get to that point with anything where you could just watch somebody basically kill a man.
Mm-hmm.
But there definitely is that code amongst cops. And I think that's half the battle. I was listening to something yesterday and they said, you have to go through more hours to become like an esthetician than you have to become a police officer.
What? No way.
I wish I was kidding.
That's so twisted.
Mind blowing. But you're like, you have to put in more hours to do lashes than to walk around wielding a gun.
Wow.
I mean, that's America though, right?
Exactly.
Wow. That's scary.
Like, it's mind blowing.
It's also just a reminder. And I mean, listen, not that we need a reminder to stop someone if another person is killing them. That's not what I'm saying, but it's a good reminder to like really stand up for what you know is right and not wait on another person to jump in and do it. Cause there have definitely been times when I've seen something happening, not necessarily another person hurting someone, but like maybe a car accident or someone has a flat tire or something like that. And I'm like, oh, I'm sure like someone's going to come get them or someone's going to help them or something like that. And it's like, just in those situations, when you see someone that needs help, like stand up and help your fellow human being, regardless of what's going on. And maybe they say, no, I'm good or like whatever, but at least you're checking in on people.
I mean,
it's just a good reminder.
I think that's, I mean, it's called the bystander effect because everyone else just assumes that somebody else is going to stop.
Right.
And all it takes is one person to actually stop. And then it's almost as if everyone will start paying attention to what's happening.
Right.
So, I mean, like you're saying, like if more of us would do stuff like that, I think ultimately things would be better because we'd really be able to A, help people, and then B, in like in matters of police stuff, like people will actually start holding like other people accountable. Because it just takes one person to speak up. Because I'm sure out of the three officers that were assisting this man, like, I'm sure they knew it was wrong, but they felt like they had to follow those orders. But in reality, if one would just one of them would have stood up, something could have probably happened differently.
Yeah, I'm wondering how they feel now. Like,
I mean, they're in jail now.
Yeah, so. Are they? So.
No, I know, but I'm just for sure. There, but I'm just wondering: are they looking back on that and going, "Holy shit! Like, why did I do? Like, what the fuck was I thinking? Like that?" Or they have a different feeling about it. You know what I mean?
I mean, who? Honestly, I would hope that they're in jail right now, thinking like that, thinking like, "Dang, I really should have handled this situation differently. I shouldn't have done that," but who really knows?
Yeah.
Like who really knows at the end of the day? Like, it's a shame.
So what are you looking for? Everyone's talking about we have to be an ally. We have to be anti-racist. What does that mean to you?
To me, it means, again, I think racism is entirely rooted in ignorance, and ignorance leads to fear. Like, we fear what we don't understand. So I think people need to just be educated. And what I would say I look for in an ally is somebody who will immediately shut down certain conversations and certain things that are said, because we just know that, you know, that's not right. Like, there's certain things that you just can't say and you can't think anymore. And that's not even because it's bad now. It's always been bad, but now it's like, okay, you can be held accountable for what you're saying. So like an example would be like, okay, if you know, you happen to be around like some of your white friends and they throw a little microaggression out towards black people, you could just simply be like, hey, you know what? That's not right. Like, you shouldn't say stuff like that. Like, and I think it starts on that level. And from there, like, real change will happen.
Yeah. And at the same time, being open to other conversations.
Exactly.
On the opposite side of things, right? Is being open to learning and hearing another perspective.
Like, that's definitely, that's what it's about. You have to be willing, just be willing to learn and to listen to the other side and the experiences that people of color have had. Because I think if years ago more of us would have actually listened to, you know, to some people's experiences and stories, we might have got past this a long time ago. Mm-hmm. But some people just block off themselves to others. And I don't think we'll ever get changed like that.
I think it's also a really weird, interesting time with social media too, because you would think that it would be easy for us to talk to people with different experiences. But I also feel like now it's also easier to separate yourself into your own little section of people who believe only what you believe.
Definitely. That's so definitely.
To just like close the computer and just walk outside, mm-hmm. you know?
And I mean, I also think too, like even amidst all this, like just even getting out and going to a protest, like just so people can see what they actually are for themselves. Like I was with a group of people 2 days ago, and they were just shocked at just how calm, peaceful, and honestly, like how fun and good of an experience it was. Because again, like the way the media has been portraying it, it's just like, it's chaos. You're going to get shot at with rubber bullets. You're going to get tear gas. Like, but it's just not, it's not that at all. Yeah. It's, I mean, it's heavy. You guys picked a really heavy topic, which I mean, it's fitting for the theme of the show.
Heavy topics.
Like extremely.
Yeah. I really appreciate you coming to talk to us, because even as a minority myself, I cannot even speak to what it means to be Black in America, obviously. So, yeah, and we don't have these conversations.
Yeah, no, I would agree.
There's a lot of fear around these conversations too, which I'm realizing now is a lot, like extremely common. Like there's fear around these conversations, maybe on both ends, I'm not sure, but definitely like there have been times when I've been afraid I would say the wrong things, you know?
Yeah.
And like not knowing how to approach it, and like with friends of mine who I'm sure now looking back, and I've talked to them about this now, thankfully, but like with certain things that were happening in the world, probably I know had to have felt a certain way. And I look back on those times when I was around them and I'm like, I never brought it up. I never, you know, said anything before. It's terrible. And I'm like, I'm so sorry that I never talked to you about this before. I just maybe didn't know how to approach it or was scared to. And it's like, yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. But I think that whole thing of having the fear of the conversation has also been brought out because social media has helped to bring about the conversation of like, it's okay if you don't know what to say or like how to say it, or if you say the wrong thing or if you misstep at first, but like just fucking talk about it and like get it out in the open. And it, and by the way, with any issue that usually makes it better, right? Is just by like breaching the conversation and being open about it and saying like, hey, I might say the wrong thing at first, but like my intentions are good. And I think it's really cool that that's happening.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
it's so necessary. And I mean, to kind of piggyback on what you're saying, like, and to also circle back to what I said before, like the only way that we're going to advance as a society is through education. And the only way you can actually educate yourself on these issues are actually by talking to people. And yes, in the process of learning, like you're going to make mistakes. You might say the right, you might say the right thing. You might say the wrong thing, but you have to be willing to have those conversations and make those mistakes to ultimately learn on how like you're supposed to move and what's supposed to happen.
Yeah. And I think also just moving forward in conjunction with, you know, protesting and voting and things like that, just we can all kind of use the tools that we have and like maybe our specialties, or if you have a platform, like Asia has a really large platform and I know she's super vocal on that, just using the tools we have to help push things forward. Because what we don't want to happen is for this to lose steam, right? Yeah. For this movement to lose steam. So I think it's really important to kind of talk about that too. I know personally, like my kind of the tool I have is that I'm a personal trainer, and like I'm working with another trainer friend of mine to start some type of event where it's like a protest fitness workout kind of a thing. And so I think that just by like getting together and collaborating and like being creative and using what we have, we can keep this movement going and continue to like keep the awareness high, you know?
No, I would definitely agree. And again, like I feel like during all this, I've found more of a voice than I've had before. because like during like Trayvon Martin, I mean, I could run down the list of names of people who have been killed at the hands of police. And it never really called to me to actually get out there. Just more so, I don't know if it was because I was distracted with other things, but having now gone out there and really taking pictures and seeing just the power in the pictures and the way that the pictures evoke emotions within people, it has given me that much more of a voice. And I mean, I can't even describe it, because I just never imagined myself being a photographer like this. And the pictures really, they inspire action. Like, it's not to the point, I have multiple people reaching out to me on a daily basis, asking me like where the protests are, what's going on. And again, I think through sharing through whatever platform we have, be it training, be it social media, like that's going to keep the ball rolling. And with the ball rolling, we'll finally get change. It might not be huge change at first, but I think eventually we will get there.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Seriously.
Oh, no problem. No problem at all.
It was good to just talk about this.
Definitely. 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 I mean, it's always, again, as we mentioned before, like just discussion and conversation, it makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah, for sure. We really appreciate you coming on. And yeah, we'll talk to you soon and we'll share your images.
Thank you so much.
No problem. You guys
have a good one. Thank you, Mike. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Bye.